Drug Take Back Day is coming up this weekend, and it's important to understand the significance of this and actually take part in it. So I had asked Commissioner Brian Caffarelli of the Department of Consumer Protection to come back on the show, and he did just that. In fact, he's here. You're such – listen, you are a man of your word, Brian Caffarelli, and I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm great. Good to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
I know, right? Long time no chat. By the way, for people who are like, what are you talking about? He was just here last week. So usually I try hard not to bother you, Brian, more than once a month. But this called for a two-time-a-month thing because I do think, all kidding aside, Drug Take Back Day, it's kind of this – we throw it out there in the news like, hey, it's happening. Okay, go. Bye. Here are the locations. And then we sort of leave it there. But talk about the significance of Drug Take Back Day and why people should actually take the 5 to 10 minutes that it really does take to go through your medicine cabinets, go through the little compartment in your car or the drawers in your house, the junk drawers. I always say that wrong. And actually clean out old prescriptions or medications, expired, all that. Why does that matter?
And thanks again for the opportunity. This is a great opportunity for people to just go through their medicine cabinets and look for unused or expired medications that they can safely dispose of. And so the DEA started hosting this back in 2010. And I've been hearing advertisements, while I was listening to you earlier. And there's a website that they have where it's easy to find a local collection site. And it is, as you said, this Saturday from 10 to 2. And so it's DEA.gov/takebackday. And so since they started this, they've collected over 20 million pounds of unwanted medication. And so what that means is that the public prevented 20 million pounds of medication from getting into the wrong hands. And it was disposed of in an environmentally sound way.
Well, and I think that it's, again, it's, you know, it's been around now for 16, this will be the 16th year, which is great. And we've even, I think, grown from that, Brian. You could actually kind of speak to that more, that there are more readily available drop-off locations than there certainly were years ago, which is great. That they're kind of available throughout the year. Sometimes they're at pharmacies or, sometimes police departments will have them, for example. But my point being is there's more of a focus on it, right? Talk about kind of the realities of when you don't dispose of those drugs. I mean, why even create this? Why? What was the point of it?
Yeah, I mean, so it is. It's a reminder. It's, springtime, spring cleaning, to take that, just a moment of your time to sort through your medication supply. For those with children or elderly loved ones, they can do an inventory of what they have, what's expired, what they may need. But there's commonly abused drugs that are in medicine cabinets. And if you leave them there, they create opportunities for them to get into the wrong hands. And so things like opioids for pain or, central nervous suppressants like Xanax or Valium or even stimulants like Adderall or Ritalin. They should be used as intended and as prescribed, but sometimes they don't. So again, if you want to participate for this Saturday, just go through your medicine cabinets, look for those expired or unused medication, and you can place the pills or capsules in a sealed bag or even their original bottle. We recommend if you're going to bring it in their original bottle to mark off your personal identification, or just remove the label. And so you can drop all those medications off, the prescription medications, or over the counter. Look, like you said, if you're not able to make it this Saturday, there are, always permanent locations. And so the Department of Consumer Protection, so why I'm here talking about it, is we have a drug control division that oversees and regulates the prescription drugs in Connecticut. And we oversee more than 100 permanent drop boxes. And so you can go to our website at ct.gov/dcp/dropbox. And there's an easy to use map there of Connecticut where you can find a drop box. And you could do that anytime. Like you said, Melissa, oftentimes these are police stations. So you could go, they're open 24 hours. So, I urge you to take advantage of it this Saturday. It's a really good reminder to do that. It helps keep your loved ones safe, prescription drugs out of the wrong hands. And again, a lot of people don't realize this, but you shouldn't be flushing this stuff down the toilet because that can create environmental problems. So this is an environmentally friendly way as well to do that. There's also a way to discard the items at home if you're not able to make it. And so we recommend placing uncrushed pills in a plastic bag with some type of undesirable substance like cat litter or coffee grounds, and then sealing the bag and placing it in the trash. And again, removing any labels on pill bottles or crossing out your personal information before you throw them away.
Okay, so as a reporter, I've been doing this type of job since 2012. Okay, so I've been a journalist for a while. And drug take back day is not new to me. I've talked about this on television, in the radio, in ads. This is, you know, it's par for the course. But what I've realized in recent years, we've got Commissioner Brian Caffarelli here, is that you could give all the PSAs and the information and all that, but do people actually go into their cabinets or actually clean out and dispose of drugs properly? I don't know. I don't have that. But here's what I can tell you, Brian, and I think this is so important to highlight. When I was looking up just statistics, and people can look this up, you know, people abusing unused medications in America, these are the most up-to-date statistics across the country. Okay. So 13 to 14 million Americans misuse prescription drugs every year. More than 50% of people who misuse pain relievers get them from a friend or a relative. So when you hear those PSAs where it's like, grandma, grandpa, if you want to get rid of your old medications, they won't end up in my hands. That's true. That is a true thing. Up to 40% of prescription medications go unused, often remaining in unsecured home storage. One study found that 55% of households surveyed kept unused medications at home, most of them not even realizing it. Ready for this? The most common medications left in homes include antibiotics, painkillers, as some of the top ones. And I guess my point here, Brian, is if I can be honest with people, and then maybe they could be honest as well, I absolutely kind of disregarded this day other than being a journalist. You know, so sure, if my Advil, for example, has expired, I get rid of it. I toss it out. Fine. But the amount of times that you come across, how many times, be real, do you not finish your full prescription? You know, like I look at my kid who gets ear infections and, you know, how many times they give you two bottles of amoxicillin, but you only go through maybe a bottle and a half. And then that second bottle just kind of sits in the back of your fridge for I don't know how long. You know what I mean? Like, I think if people are being real, it is pretty common that either we don't finish a prescription, you've been overprescribed, or you just kind of forget about it. And then they are left in a fridge, in a drawer, in an unsecured place where it's very easy for someone to take it.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. And those statistics are, you know, very sobering. And it drives home the point. I did read a similar thing that, you know, the number one way that people begin to get medicines, prescription drugs that they abuse is from a friend or a family member from their medicine cabinet. And so, you know, it's like the scams we talk about every month. It's always going to happen to somebody else. People think that too. No one, you know, my friends, my family, they're never going to go through my, for, you know, medicine cabinet and look for drugs. But, you know, sometimes people have addiction problems and it causes them to do things way out of character. And so, you know, just take that ability away by, you know, getting rid of these drugs. And I think the message, I mean, I'm always, you know, when we talk, I try and look at the positive side of things. I think that the message is getting out there that this is a real problem and that by doing this, you can have a real effect. Because if you look at even recent statistics, the collection sites themselves are increasing. Now there's over 4,300 collection sites nationwide. Mm-hmm. Last October, the DEA collected, you know, about 570,000 pounds of unused medication. Then in April, because I said, you know, they do this twice a year, it was up to 620,000 pounds of unused or unwanted medication. So it's growing, you know, and I think that that speaks to the success of their program. Additionally, we have seen the same trends in those boxes that we monitor, those permanent drop boxes that we have listed on our website. The trend of year has gone up every year. And so it's a good thing. People are getting used to it. It's kind of like Shred Day. At first, people are like, what's this all about? You know, they get it. It's catching on. And I think, to your point, people understand the implications of not doing it and how easy it is to do it. And so the DEA is trying to make it really simple by putting these locations in very convenient areas. I mean, there's a lot of them this Saturday, and we do maintain them throughout the year if you're not able to make it.
Yeah. And I think, to your point, Brian, it's I'm going to put a link, obviously, to your podcast, obviously, on our website, voiceofct.com, where people can easily search. And again, it's not just police departments, it's senior centers, it's community centers, pharmacies. There are plenty of places to go, and it's very easy to find one near you. But also, I'm going to link, if you can't attend this event, how you can go year round to drop boxes, how you can dispose of them. I have links, and we'll put them on our website. Before I let you go, though, Brian, I've got to ask you about prediction markets and regulating. I know that's totally off topic, but if you don't mind giving me a quick thing, because I was reading that Connecticut lawmakers are really looking to better regulate this.
Well, look, let me just start by saying that only licensed entities may offer sports wagering or wagering online in Connecticut. Prediction markets, they don't have any of the safeguards that our regulated market have in place. So they don't adhere to the age verification or requirement of individuals being 21. They don't adhere to the technical standards we have in Connecticut. They leave your financial and personal information vulnerable. There are no integrity controls, so there's nothing to prevent participants or insiders from placing wagers on events. You know, regulated operators that I mentioned have controls in place to prohibit these known insiders. If an issue arises with them, which I'm hearing more and more it does, such as a wager not paying as advertised, there is no recourse for our department to cover recost loss funds for consumers, which we do in the regulated market to the tune of millions of dollars every year. And so these, like I said, these platforms, they offer wagers on events where the outcome is known by many people, like award shows or professional team trades and other events. So insiders with special knowledge of an event can place bets on the outcome they already know. So they moreover, they advertise to individuals on our voluntary self-exclusion list. Those that have taken the step to say, I have a problem with gambling, I don't want to be able to gamble in Connecticut, and they advertise on college campuses, which is illegal in Connecticut, and they offer this opportunity to individuals under 21. It is an unregulated section of the market that is not licensed in Connecticut. And so you are hearing a lot about them. There's a lot of ads targeting consumers in Connecticut. They're flashy, easy-to-use apps, but beware.
Well, and actually, to that point, Commissioner Caffarelli, I know at the federal level, specifically Connecticut lawmakers like Senator Blumenthal introduced the Prediction Markets Security and Integrity Act, attacking a lot of the things that you're talking about. I should say supporting a lot of the things that you're talking about, you know, prohibiting individuals or prediction market operators from using or wagering where somebody who's an insider would have the upper hand, essentially, or even attracting or going to advertising individuals who are under the age of 21, even restricting operators from offering listings that are susceptible to manipulation or fraudulent activity, like war, military action. I mean, really serious things. So I certainly am going to be diving into this a little bit more. Unfortunately, we've run out of time today, but I did want to get your take on it and just to be able to hear what the laws are currently here in Connecticut and why there's some controversy surrounding this. So thank you for that, Brian. And I don't think I'll bother you again this month, but I definitely will talk to you again next month, and I appreciate it.